Welcome back to the Bible Class Debrief. We are here with Tim Nichols and Micah Haynes for the Bible Class Debrief. We're on lessons 4.3. We're doing three today, 4.3, 4.4, and 4.5. And this is the story of Joseph and Judah and all of his brothers going down to Egypt. So we'll start out with the story of Joseph and Judah, which we're trying to cast our memories all the way back to last week when Tim and Micah taught this lesson. And so take it away, Tim. What did you do with 4.3 as far as you can remember?
One of the big things I did was I put on the whiteboard, we did a little inheritance math, because this is part of what makes this story make sense. So worked through what the inheritance looks like if dad has three sons. So double portion means you divide the estate into four parts, and the firstborn son gets two of them, and then one part each for the other two. But if dad only has two sons, then you divide it into three parts, and the firstborn son gets two thirds of the inheritance. So we worked through that before we dove into the story. Just so that when we got to why did Onan do what he did, it's the difference between 25% of dad's estate and 66% of dad's estate. There's Judah's a rich man. There's a lot of money on the line here.
Right.
So we set that up. I had been setting up double portion and inheritance stuff already with Jacob and Esau. So it was relatively easy to set that up here, have them think it through. And then when we get to here's what Onan did, now why? What's going on in his head? What's going on in his head is, first of all, he's gross and he does this in the worst possible way.
Yeah.
And takes advantage of Tamar. But he could have just said, no, I'm not gonna. But he does this instead. But what's behind it is he wants that firstborn slot with all of the money that comes with it. So we set that up ahead of time, so that then as we work through the story, they see what's going on with him, and then God kills him. And having worked through with the Dinah story, what your prospects are as a woman in this culture where all of the work is physical and the retirement plan is having lots of kids who can take care of you when you're old. Like, what are Tamar's prospects at this point? What are her options? And on the other hand, Judah's like, she's two for two and he's only got one son left. he's got to be thinking like, I don't really want to do this again. So then when she, it shows us something about Judah, that this is the plan that comes to her. Like, obviously patronizing Canaanite sacred prostitutes was a thing that he did on the regular. Otherwise, why would she think this would work?
Right.
So he's not in a good place. And then he has to, but he owns it when he's publicly confronted. You know, she's been more righteous than I. I'm wrong. She's right. So I spent most of my class time on the Judah side, because the Joseph side they've heard in Sunday school since they were kids.
Right.
And so that let me go a little lighter on the Joseph side. And the short version of Joseph is every time you give him something, God blesses it and he ends up running it. So he ends up running Potiphar's house, and then he ends up running the jail. And then he ends up running Egypt. And God moves him each step of the way here. And there's this huge contrast between them as far as, you know, Joseph's sexual proclivities and Judah's. Mm-hmm. Huge difference. But Judah, we get this interesting thing where Judah does in the end do the least wrong thing he can do at that point. It's hard to say it's the right thing quite.
Right.
But the least wrong thing. And then a couple of lessons later, when we get into the genealogy of who all goes down into Egypt, he acknowledges Perez as his son.
Yeah.
Perez is in that as the son of Judah. So he doesn't just say she did she's more righteous than I am, and then, you know, stuff Perez into a closet somewhere. He keeps him as part of his household as his son. So he comes out doing, you know, after doing a lot of wrong, doing a righter thing than we would have expected, maybe.
Right.
Which is the setup for what happens later on.
Good, good, yeah. What about you, Micah?
Yeah, I also drawed, that is not a word, drew on the contrast between Joseph and Judah. And we started by talking about how Judah goes and marries a Canaanite wife. And it's like, hey, what's wrong with this picture? You know, this is not something that he's supposed to do. And so we already see that he's walking away from what God has, you know, said that he wanted for this family. And, this is probably a symbol of him also kind of walking away from Yahweh. And what we know from his decisions, like, he's not really following Yahweh. Versus Joseph, you know, Joseph also ends up being away from his family and his religion, but in this case, he's forced to. And even while he's in foreign lands, where it could have been super tempting to just do whatever he wanted to do when presented with the temptations, he actually stays faithful to God. And not only that, but he's like constantly telling people about Yahweh and giving Yahweh credit for things. And so we talked a little bit about the just how what's happening to Tamar is like why that's so bad. And the Dinah story definitely set the precedent for talking about that. And the kids were kind of like, oh my gosh, like how do we respond to this? But it's an important story to talk about. And then we talked about at the end when, even though what Tamar did is not okay, like she is still kind of seen as the hero in this story. Because at the end of the day, like she did what was better than Judah, even though, like, obviously pretending to be a prostitute and sleeping with your father-in-law isn't recommended. So, and then we went through the Joseph story a little bit and talked about kind of similar things. Like he gets to be in charge of Potiphar's house, and then he's like wrongly accused, whereas Judah is like correctly accused. And then he ends up being in jail, and even there he's following the Lord, and then he ends up being second in command of all of Egypt.
So all of this, Joseph as kind of consistently faithful and rising to the top of whatever place, and then having these kind of crash and burn moments where, you know, he loses everything, everything he has, contrasted with Judah, who goes off the wrong way, but has some redemptive elements in the end of his story, kind of sets up this whole story with Joseph and his brothers getting tested in Egypt, starting in chapter 42. So let's go ahead and roll into that. What did you guys do with that? Let's start with Micah this time.
Okay.
Pressure's on. Throw a curveball here.
Right. Yeah. Well, we started out by just talking about where we are in the story. I mean, we kind of went and reviewed the dreams that Joseph interprets for the Pharaoh, and how like they've had this 8 years of awesome crops and all of that, and they've saved, and Joseph's been a good steward of that. And now there's famine and everyone's coming to Joseph. And I've got one student in the class that I know his family pretty well, and he has 5 siblings, I want to say. So I was like, hey, so how would you feel if, you know, your siblings sold you into slavery, and then all of a sudden you've been made second in command of, you know, all of Egypt. And as far as they know, I mean, they haven't seen you since then, but all of a sudden you see your family walking in and they're hungry and they're asking you for help and they don't know who you are. Like, how would you respond? What would you be tempted to do? And a lot of the students were like, I mean, I'd be like tempted to put them into slavery. And I'd be like, this is my chance to revenge. And so we talked about how that probably, that may have been a temptation for Joseph. Like, what would have been going through his head in that moment? And then we talked about how what he really wants is to see if his brothers have changed at all. And how they're going to respond when faced with the temptation of doing the exact thing that they did to him, to Benjamin. And so all of these tests sort of set up that situation. And so we went through the different tests and talked about that and talked about how Joseph must have been feeling. And like, it's such a great story. It was a fun one to go through with them. And then at the end, how Judah ends up being the Christ figure in the story.
Nice. What else did you have, Tim?
Did it similarly. I mean, part of the setup for this is that this could be one of the great revenge stories of antiquity. I mean, imagine making a movie, like an alternate history movie, where Joseph goes evil when he sees his brothers in the food line. Like, it could be like, he could do everything that he does, get to where dad finally dies, and then be like, all right, it's time to settle accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
which
actually,
they kind of thought maybe is coming.
They're actually afraid of that. It has occurred to them that this might be that story. And what he actually does, is a series of tests to find out, are they still the guys that he knew or not? And Judah's not. Judah has become the man who will die for his brother. He wasn't that guy before. And this is where all of the last lesson matters, is Scripture sets us up for a trajectory with Judah where he is reluctantly and, you know, not starting from a good place, becoming more righteous as we go. And ultimately finds himself in this place where, well, you know, I'm not going home without Benjamin. So if that means I don't go home at all, then so be it. But I ain't going home without him. And that's the thing that Joseph can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
And I just like, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around this. Like, imagine being one of Joseph's brothers. Here you are. There's all this weird stuff going on. And from the beginning, Reuben has been going, guys, this is because of what we did to Joseph. So that's kind of banging around in your head. And it just keeps getting weirder. And then the Egyptian guy, all of a sudden, you know, Judah gives his great speech. And the Egyptian guy, all of a sudden, yells, everybody get out. Not you guys. Everybody else get out. And so the servants are out and they're, of course, listening at the doors because that's what servants do. And then the next thing that comes out of his mouth in Hebrew, he's been speaking through an interpreter the whole time. The Egyptian guy looks at you and in Hebrew says, I'm Joseph. Like, what? Who? it cannot have computed. He's like, no, come here. Look at me. I'm Joseph. I'm your brother that you sold into slavery. That, you know, stop me if this starts sounding familiar, guys. what a moment. Like, that's amazing. What a moment.
Yeah.
And God, and he's already got it together in his head. God put me in here to save the whole family. Which is the, like, that's what the double portion is actually for. Is you become responsible for taking care of your family.
Mm-hmm.
The double portion is you get that because you have this huge burden of responsibility. Joseph rises to the, you know, God placed him in a position where Joseph can rise to the occasion and do what the oldest brother is supposed to do for his whole family, all 11 brothers. And dad, and like bring everybody down. It's good. I've got it. It's, which is like, which sets up this amazing, okay, so Joseph gets the blessing, yes?
Yes.
Ish.
Ish, kind of.
He gets the double portion.
Uh-huh.
And then Judah gets the ruling blessing, and that hasn't been split up before in the line.
Right.
So that lead up, everything is pointing at, I mean, at Joseph is going to be the one. We just need everybody back together so we can have the moment where we all realize Joseph is the one.
Uh-huh.
And then everybody gets back together, and that's not quite what happens.
So that's the next lesson.
It is. I'm cheating. All right. Sorry.
Well, I think we're ready to jump ahead to that. So this is the story of Joseph bringing the whole family going back to Egypt, and then, of course, culminating with the blessings from Jacob. So, Tim, you've already hinted at it, but part of it in chapter 50 there is that Judah ends up with the ruling blessing instead of Joseph, which is everybody was kind of expecting. But what else was in this lesson that you brought out for your students?
Imagine being Jacob, right? You send the boys off. A few days go by when, like, it's a journey of a certain length. They can't come back any earlier than whenever. But then you start watching. And you go out of the tent in the morning and look and watch the horizon. Because when Joseph and then Pharaoh, because the servants are listening at the doors, and somebody run off and tell Pharaoh, Joseph's family's here. And Pharaoh's like, great, bring them all. It's, what are they doing in Canaan? There's nothing up there. Get them down here. Like, here, let's take some carts. Let's just get it done. So you're Jacob and you're watching the horizon, and what you're looking for is guys walking with donkeys. And what you see is ox carts. Well, it's not them. it's some caravan from, that's weird though, some caravan from somewhere. But, and then it keeps getting closer and it's like, I mean, that one looks like Simeon. It kind of walks like, what's happening? They didn't take that much money. Boys, what did you do? Because
they're raiders.
It's That's a good question, man. Well, we bought everything fair and square in Egypt, and then we ran across this caravan on the way home. And well, I mean, they're the kinds of guys they might. And then the story that comes out of them is, so remember Joseph? Funny story, kind of a good news, bad news deal. Bad news first, we might have lied about him being dead. Good news, he's not dead. Also, he runs Egypt, as it turns out, and invited us all down to join him. And he can't process it. It's got to be like the same kind of moment as when Joseph goes, I'm Joseph. And they're like, you're what? Did somebody teach him to say like a sentence, a random sentence in Hebrew? Because it sounded like he said, I'm Joseph. It's got to be that again, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, Joseph's alive. What? And running, like, it just, like, it doesn't get any better. They keep talking and it just keeps getting weirder. And running Egypt. And he sent all this stuff with us. And the job here is to load up the carts and we're going to Egypt, guys. And then Jacob gets 17 years. He's 130 when he goes down into Egypt, and he gets 17 more years where he gets to live with his whole family reunited again before he dies.
Right.
And he has this amazing interaction with Pharaoh when he comes down. Where Pharaoh asks how old he is, seeing that he's very old. And he says, I'm 130 years old, and few and evil have been the days of the length of my pilgrimage. And it has not attained to the length of my, you know, my father's days in their pilgrimage. He's still in that close enough to the flood that they remember.
Yeah.
They used to live longer. Abraham isn't that far from him and made it to close to 200. He's very old at 130 and he feels it. They're dying earlier and they don't know why. And that's still part of them.
Right.
And Joseph fulfills that duty as the son that takes care of the family. The guys get like all the grazing for their flocks and herds, and then paid to tend to Pharaoh's flocks and herds. Egyptians don't like shepherds anyway. Hey, they're all shepherds. And that showed up earlier in the like Egyptians don't eat with Hebrews thing with when Joseph had them come to his house to eat too. Earlier in the story. So then when we come to the ruling blessing, what you're expecting to see, it's such a setup because Joseph has brought his sons in chapter 48. Joseph brings his sons and Jacob double portions it, blesses both of them like they're his own children. Okay, so it's Joseph, right? And then he has all the sons in, you know, runs through why Reuben, Simeon, and Levi are disqualified.
Mm-hmm.
And then drops it on Judah. Which is, that's the ruling line. That's the line of Christ. Judah is the one who is ready to die for his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where else would you bring Christ's line through than the one who's willing to die for his brothers?
Yep.
And then not just, of course, because God's fun like this, not just through Judah, but through Judah and Tamar Perez. And Perez is in the list of names. So Judah's kept him around. Perez has two kids of his own by the time they come down into Egypt. So it's been a while, actually.
Yeah.
And that like that's this interesting hint of we see this snapshot of Judah doing finally like fessing up and doing right by Tamar. Owns Perez as his kid because he's still here and got kids of his own, but like he's part of the family. Judah has grown.
Mm-hmm. Good. Micah, what did you take a similar approach?
Yeah, we talked a lot about how the actions that Jacob takes during this time are indicative of his hope for the future. He goes to Egypt knowing that his family will one day come back to Canaan. And there are things that he does with this, you know, having that knowledge. So they go to Egypt and then... But he insists to be buried in Canaan, which is interesting. And then when he blesses his sons, we kind of went over the details of his blessing. We talked about how it talks about how Judah's like neck will always be on his enemies and like, hey, head crushing theme.
Mm-hmm.
Notice that. And then also how it talks about how his robe will like have the stains of grapes on them. And like, does that remind you of anything, you know? So we talked about how, again, Jesus is, or God is putting these hints that Jesus is coming. It's just more and more foreshadowing happening here, and just how significant it is that Judah is the one that's chosen. You know, not Joseph, like you would think, but it's Judah that's, you know, descendant ends up being like the savior of the world. And there's a reason why Jesus is called the Lion of Judah. And even though Judah is like, for most of the story, really not a good person, we do see him laying down his life for his brothers, or at least being willing to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's chosen to be the person who brings that seed line. So we focus mostly on that. And then we talked about how this idea of we're all kind of exiles in the land, and a lot of times God will give us promises, you know, whether that's from scripture or something that God gives us personally. And it's important to live your life in such a way that you have hope for that, you know, these promises God has given you. And also we talked about the fact that we're citizens in heaven. We're citizens of heaven, but we're living here on earth now. And like, we're supposed to live with that hope that we will one day be like in the full manifested kingdom of God. And there are ways we should live now with that hope. So we talked a little bit about what that looks like. Yeah.
And I was thinking about that too, that Jacob goes down to Egypt, and he spent the first, you know, large portion, a good portion of the first part of his life up in Haran. And now he's spending the last portion of his life. I wonder if you could, you know, count up the years and figure out how much of his life, what percentage of his life he actually spent in the promised land. And even while he was there, he didn't control the land. He wasn't, you know, king of Canaan, had enemies on every side. But he still did that. You know, he had that hope when he went up to Haran, and then he had that hope again when he went down to Egypt. What did you do for application, Tim?
One of the things we did was look at blessing and the power of blessing. When Jacob meets Pharaoh, he blesses him, which is a little weird.
Yeah.
In that Jacob is essentially a refugee, a very favored refugee, because he's Joseph's father, and Pharaoh loves Joseph, but still a refugee. And you would expect, like, you know, thank you very much, we're very grateful, but he blesses him. That's a position of authority, but that is our position as people of God in the world. Part of our job is to take that authority and bless.
Mm-hmm.
And he rises to it.
Yeah.
And then he blesses his Ephraim and Manasseh. He blesses it. This is part of that, you know, you see this with the patriarchs. These blessings matter. They carry real weight. And this is something that, as the people of God, we have kind of forgotten how to do. So we need to be able to do this.
Yeah.
And do it well.
Very good. So that takes us through the story of Joseph and his brothers. And we're getting kind of long, so we'll cut it off here, but we'll see you all next time on Bible Class Debrief.